Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the February 14, 2021 session, focusing on Mark chapter 9, verses 2 through 9, Friends in High Places. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Daniel Glaze.
And I'm Bert Montgomery.
Friends in High Places. What a great title. Where have I heard that before?
Yeah. I think it was a country song. Oh, wait. Oh.
Something like that.
Well, it makes me wonder, what's the highest place you've been? I mean, other than like in an airplane, like what's the highest place on which you stood on this planet? And how do you feel about high places?
Well, not great. I think it may have been, it's been a while, but my wife and I and our little then old beat up Honda Civic climbed Mount Washington, and that may have been the highest I had been up. And yeah, my knees were knocking the whole time, so I don't do well with that.
Well, you know, I grew up in and around New Orleans, which is like below water level, so you know, just getting equal is to water level is pretty high for me. But as kids, my parents took us to the Great Smoky Mountains. And I've been back a few times since and been up to some mountains in upstate New York that have taken my breath away. And then I've been in some skyscrapers, you know, the kind where you look out and you can't see what's below you. And that makes me sick and I get all dizzy. But I like the mountains. I do like the mountains. But yeah, it could get I get kind of scared of heights. Mm-hmm.
When I was in college, I studied abroad in India, and a part of that experience, we went sightseeing in Sikkim, which is kind of, a territory of India. It's on the border of Nepal, and we traveled through all of the mountains up there, and I actually was on, I'm going to see if I can say it right, Mount Kanchenjunga. It's the third highest mountain in the world. And so I didn't go to the top of the peak, but we traveled all over that place. And I remember one morning we got to a village late one night. So it was dark and you couldn't see anything. We went to our rooms and the rooms opened up to the outside. And so when we stepped out the next morning, we stepped out into a cloud. Like, I could not see my hand in front of my face all the way stretched out because the cloud was so thick. And then when it lifted, I mean, it was gorgeous. You could just see for miles. So, and I have not typically been afraid of heights, but apparently I think that changes as you get older because I have found myself when I am standing at a high precipice to have that that nervous butterfly feeling in my stomach that I used to not have.
I think that's true, Nikki, because I'm a lot more squeamish about it than I used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to be the first one to get to the edge of something and go all the way to the top and ride all the roller coasters, and that is shifting for sure.
Well, I, I'm not sure what the highest place is. I'd have to actually see what the sea level height altitudes are, but the place I remember the most was when I was in Estes Park, Colorado, and on one of the high peaks there where you can overlook this huge range of the Rocky Mountains, and just breathtaking. I won't forget that. And it was weird because there was a group there that was with me that everybody just was so quiet. Nobody wanted to talk. It was just one of these kind of moments of awe as you peer out across this really different kind of landscape. Now, I'm not scared of heights, but if you park me near a tall building and I look up, that makes me dizzy. I mean, I literally have to hold on to something. So I can go on the top of the building and look down, I'm okay. But if I'm at the bottom of something tall and I look up, like a tall radio tower or anything like that, I get dizzy looking up. Is that weird or what?
Yep.
Yeah.
So you're afraid of the heights.
I am afraid of the height. I'm not afraid of looking down from the heights. Maybe it has something to do with being really short.
I was going to say that might be for our vertically challenged friends. If you are vertically challenged, you should write in and tell us.
Well, okay. So I used to, when I would stand next to Rob Nash when we worked in ministry together and I looked up at him, I'd get dizzy.
I believe it.
He has that effect on everybody, though.
He does. Oh, my goodness. Well, however you enjoy or don't enjoy high places, we have a text today that puts us in a high place. And Bert, would you help us get started and a look at it?
Yeah, I'll try. And it may surprise you, but I'm going to start by naming some songs because there are lots of great songs about mountains. Climb Every Mountain, Rocky Mountain High, Rocky Mountain Way, Big Rock Candy Mountain. Mountains have mythical power to them. We are drawn to the mountains. It's almost as if mountains call to us. In our great stories of faith throughout our scriptures, mountains are holy places. It's on a mountain, Mount Horeb, that God calls Moses. It's on Mount Sinai that God gives the law to Moses. Elijah wins the Super Bowl showdown of prophets on Mount Carmel. Our beloved Beatitudes in Matthew's Gospel comes from Jesus' sermon on the Mount. The New Jerusalem we read about in Revelation is also known as Mount Zion. Throughout the Bible, mountains symbolize things like stability and God's power. And in today's text from Mark's Gospel, it is high up on that mountain that Jesus is revealed to be over both Moses and Elijah, that Jesus is revealed to be over even the most revered representatives of God's law and God's prophets. And Peter, James, and John witness this terrifying and holy event that we refer to as the Transfiguration. It would seem that with such an overwhelming revelation of who Jesus is, I mean, this story includes a voice coming from the cloud telling the disciples, "This is my son, listen to him." It would seem that such a literally proverbial mountaintop experience would immediately transform these three disciples into the most super of super Christ followers. And yet, as we continue on in Mark's gospel, we'll see that Peter, James, and John, even on their best days, still see and relate to Jesus through their own limited political theology. Will Jesus choose one of them to be his right-hand man when he overthrows the Roman government and establishes his kingdom? We see that Peter, James, and John, even on their best days, still do not seem too keen on the idea of self-sacrifice, or of Jesus intentionally going directly into Jerusalem where everybody knows he will be killed. We see that Peter, James, and John, even in their best moments, still find it too easy to love Jesus when they think they're going to get something out of it, but have a lot of questions and even resist Jesus when things aren't going the way they think they should go. Oh yes, way up high on that mountain, they catch a glimpse that Jesus is so much bigger than they are, that Jesus is so much bigger than their own hopes and dreams, that Jesus is so much bigger than even the most important figures and the most important teachings that they have always held on to in their faith, that God through Jesus is always so much bigger. And yet, they continue to struggle with that, with how that plays out in their real world when they go back to the valleys below. As it is in the biblical accounts, so it is with us. Being high up on a mountain can be breathtaking, can be refreshing, and sometimes downright terrifying. The holiest of moments for us often are all of those things at the same time, aren't they? And like these three disciples before us, we often feel that our mountaintop moments with God will forever alter everything in our lives from that moment forward. But eventually, the real world and daily life have a way of erasing this holy epiphany from our memory. And we end up getting caught up again in our little worlds of power and greed and religious and ethnic and nationalist differences and boundaries. Before we began recording just a few moments ago, the four of us were discussing why the lectionary and the church calendar has us focus on the Transfiguration somewhere around this point each and every year, year after year. Well, for one, the lectionary, you know, follows a 3-year cycle of the Gospels, and it is found the Transfiguration is one of those few stories that is found in all 3 of the first 3 Gospels. And maybe this is why. Maybe we need to return to the mountain each year with the disciples to be reminded. Maybe we need to return so that we can come back down at least once a year from that mountain with a refreshed and renewed perspective that will carry us through the rest of the year. Maybe we need to return to the mountain each year with the disciples to be reminded that Jesus is always bigger, that God is always bigger, even bigger than our most treasured and most beloved beliefs, our most certain practical and political ways of doing things, our faith heroes, even bigger, and yes, I'm going to say it, even bigger than our favorite pastors and preachers and theologians. Maybe the Transfiguration comes around every year on our church calendar because the mountain still calls to us. I began this by naming some songs about mountains, and I will end by sharing a verse from my favorite song about a mountain. My dear friend Daniel Bailey, the greatest singer-songwriter you've probably never heard of, gives us this song, simply called The Mountain. The mountain is calling. Travelers, take to the road. Oh, the mountain is calling. Traveler, it's time to come home. Come home to find the God that is bigger than the sum of our deeds, the taker of fears and the giver of dreams, the God that is bigger than the plans we have made, than the bombs in the sky or the flags that we wave. Boy, do we need to hear that right now, don't we? As we consider this text this week, may we hear the mountain of God calling to us, traveler, it's time to come home.
Bert, thank you for that Bible background. I think you put your finger on something. I know there's one of the minor points you made here, because you made a lot of wonderful points, but the connection between the mountain's beauty and its scariness, for lack of a better term, I don't know that I had thought about that quite as much. But as I think about all those mountaintop experiences and beautiful moments, fear was not antithetical to that or didn't distract from that, but how fear sometimes is so closely related to some of those beautiful moments. I don't know what I'm getting at, but I'm just thinking about, you know, like when at the birth of my first child, you know, such a beautiful moment in a, oh no, what do we do now kind of thing, you know? And after baptism or lots of these beautiful high spiritual moments, there's a good bit of fear too. I don't know what I'm getting at there. That just really jumped out at me.
I wonder if the connection is because often these mountaintop moments are transformative. Mm-hmm. And if transformation, even when wanted, leaves us feeling uncertain because you were something and now you're something else in some shape, form, or fashion, and you've got to figure out how to wear that and how to carry that and how to live into that. So I wonder if it is that transformation that happens when we're in those moments. Bert, I appreciated your background, and I particularly connected to and appreciated you reminding us how we come back to this text every year. You were very kind, and you did not say how I was complaining about how we have to teach this text every year. And I appreciate your generosity in not outing me. But I was bemoaning the fact that I feel like I have taught this text a million times and not sure I have anything else to say on it. But you helped me think of that in a different way, that it's not necessarily about having to find something new, but that returning to the mountain, returning to this text, returning to the memory of who Jesus is, even in all of Jesus's grandness, is part of our Christian discipline. It's part of what we practice so that we are sustained and reminded of what gives us life and hope and joy. So I really appreciated that. And that, you know, you didn't throw me under the bus.
You know, my wife and I, for our honeymoon, we drove to the Smoky Mountains, which was probably the first time I'd been back since I was a kid with my parents. And we honeymooned in Townsend, Tennessee, just at the foot of the Smokies, outside of Gatlinburg. And we went back 2 years ago, which was for our 30th anniversary. And the little mom and pop hotel that we stayed at is still there. And we stayed in one of the same rooms that we stayed at before and had the same view out over the mountains. And 30 years later, it still was breathtaking. It was so renewing and refreshing and a time of recommitment in ways that we did not anticipate it to be, to the point we decided we want to go back as often as we can now, because we're in our 50s, but we haven't made it back yet. But there's not Gatlinburg was pretty much the same. Probably some of the stores had come and gone, but it was still a, you know, touristy thing. But there was still something about just going back and experiencing. And I think there is something to the going back. We do this with Easter. We do this with the story of Good Friday, the crucifixion. We do it with the story of the resurrection. We do it with the story of Advent and the story of Christmas. So why not be reminded every year that Jesus is bigger, that God is bigger than even our most precious theologians, our most precious theologies, our most precious political leanings, and to be taken somewhere where, Daniel, as you were talking about, it's hard to express. I mean, we can't put it into words. The fear and the renewing sense that it's just, I mean, mountains do that to us. And I think genuine experiences with God do that to us.
Hmm. As we're sitting here talking about this, and we keep talking about these mountaintop experiences, I find myself wondering about something just because of my own personal experience. So I'm curious, when we say mountaintop experience, what is the first thing that comes to your mind? David, you're grinning.
All right. So yeah, the first thing that comes to mind is youth camp.
Yeah, same. I was going to say the same thing. Yeah.
Absolutely.
When I was growing up.
Yeah. And I mean, as kid, well, I was a kid raised in the 90s in the white evangelical church. I am very familiar with mountaintop experiences as a youth. But it made me think, is there something about that age that makes us more open to those kinds of experiences? Because I'll be honest, like, it doesn't happen that way now. I have moments when I have awe, when I am taken aback, when I am struck by the majesty of God's creation or the tenderness with which God creates. Like there are moments like that, but they're different. And so I wonder what that's about. Do we lose something or gain something into adulthood that changes and shifts that? Are we more open to that kind of thing when we are younger? I don't know. We keep saying mountaintop experiences, and I just keep thinking youth group. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Can I have those now?
I don't think I'm answering your question, but or responding to you adequately, but I wonder if we still have those moments, but they seem to be fleeting. They don't last. And I'm struck by the fact that they're maybe not supposed to.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, at least, I think sometimes those mountaintop experiences can prepare us for the valley, which is where we live life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that gives us the strength, the sustenance to live life in the valley, which is, you know, the way I read the story, what Peter wants to stay on the mountain, but Jesus is already headed back. Because that's where life is to be lived.
Mm-hmm. And Jesus is not just headed back. When they go back down, Jesus sets his sights on Jerusalem. I mean, and he starts the journey back to Jerusalem to where he's crucified. Like, this is the turning point. At least, I think at least in Mark's gospel. It may not be in every gospel. I'd have to go look. But there is something about it. It's preparing Jesus for sacrifice. It's preparing Jesus for death.
Back to your question, Nikki, about youth groups. And I mean, I used to craft those experiences for youth groups.
Right.
And really did intend for us, it was a summer experience that was crafted that sometimes might also include a choir tour or a stay at Koinonia Farms or, mm-hmm. And then a retreat. A set of experiences that were built around that. And I, you know, I really did want to tell myself that what we were doing together was building a repository of memories that hopefully could be accessed as they grew older. And I do think it's harder as we are older because the kind of, they gave to me as the youth leader a level of trust and control over their week that I don't think any adult is going to allow someone else to have.
That's very true.
And I'm not sure we should. Right, but I mean, right. there was a level of just opening up oneself and the level of sharing that could occur.
Yeah.
That I think is just really, really hard for those of us with a lot at stake.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah.
In some ways, teenagers, as mean as they can be sometimes, also can be the sweetest things to each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that, and Nikki, your previous point, that makes me think, all right, so read any commentary or heck, listen to any of my sermons on this text. We get on to Peter for wanting to stay on the mountain because he doesn't get it, right? That's what we often say. Even though I love Peter. He may be one of my favorite characters.
I love Peter.
Because, incidentally, I've said this on here before. I love Peter because everyone has a friend like Peter that whenever they open their mouth, everybody gets nervous. You know what I mean? So
I'm that friend.
Anyway, when you think about what was awaiting Jesus back in the valley, and frankly, the wonderful experience they were having, I can't blame Peter for saying, let's take a snapshot and let's just freeze this right here. So often we say his response is because he doesn't get it. You can't stay there on the mountain. But wouldn't we all love to? I mean, I would have done the exact same thing. Oh, do we have to go down? Yeah, let's stay up here a little bit longer.
A little longer.
Yeah, I was blessed to be able to go to Israel in 2016, I think it was. And I had never been before. And, you know, just traveling in the Holy Land is an experience in itself. But there were several points in our itinerary where we were at high places in Israel. Now, these places don't compare to the Rocky Mountains or, you know, I mean, they're nowhere near that tall. These are worn, old mountains where they do occur. Most of Israel is a flatter surface. And, of course, you get to the Dead Sea, it's really low. Yeah. But near the Dead Sea is Masada, which is incredibly high. And the views from there are breathtaking. Mm-hmm. anyway, it was a very memorable thing. And I would have liked to have stayed up there as long as we could have. As fondly as we remember those mountaintop experiences in our lives, they are harder to find. I hope we all can still seek them out, though, and maybe, like these teenagers that we've described, allow ourselves to be vulnerable and open to those moments, and to be willing, like Peter, to linger in them. One of the wordsmiths that we often turn to is Henry Nouwen. And he, like many theologians, has reflected on this idea of mountaintop. And I'd like to close our time for this episode with these words from Henry Nouwen about mountaintops. And this is how he says it. At some moments, we experience complete unity within us and around us. This may happen when we stand on a mountaintop and are captivated by the view. It may happen when we witness the birth of a child or the death of a friend. It may happen when we have an intimate conversation or a family meal. It may happen in church during a service or in a quiet room during prayer. But whenever and however it happens, we say to ourselves, "This is it. Everything fits. All I ever hoped for is here." Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.